Cool, and moving on to the final segment, the personal side. So we had a very good question, and I think it's on the minds probably of a couple of our listeners, the people that know you personally as well as people that don't know you but know you from the industry. So Mark Mushlin asks, so you've had many roles, Tim, you've had a very clear development to the way, all the way to the top. What's the main driver and wish for the next step? More risk, more fun?
Now, I sometimes I wish I was more of a risk taker than I am. I think this is the biggest risk I've done my entire career. I've been so lucky that jobs have always kind of appeared for me coincidentally, that seemed to just have helped, my CV, and has been something I like to do, and something that's given me the necessary learnings and exposure. I would like to try something totally different now, if possible. I do know that I'm an expert in container shipping, but I mean, so more risk, more fun. I mean, fun, I don't need more of. I have had fun. I have seriously had fun. This is my fun. There was another question about my fulfilling and greatest achievements in this role, and you know, when I see how happy my people are, you know, when I go to, so I was in North China a couple of months ago, and you know, everyone was just unbelievably happy and energized and motivated and can do, and I mean, that is just fantastic. Mm. That is what is fun for me. Then I have achieved my goal as CEO. Mm. You know, when I see that, it just makes me incredibly happy. Mm. And there's nothing more to ask for. Mm. Then of course some people ask me, so why do you quit? I mean, why do you leave MCC? But I mean, hey, 9 years in the same role, and I don't think I can retire in this role. I think I should try something new in my life before it's too late. I also don't want to go to the grave having worked for only one company. I mean, although 14 different jobs, but I've only been with the Maersk Group, you can say, right, for 27 years. So, no, thanks for the question, Mark. Maybe it's time to take some more risks for the next one.
And try a different type of fun, right? It's
Yes, I will go traveling a little with the family and so on. Do the Inca Trail in Peru. Since I lived in Argentina, I always wanted to do that Inca Trail. And before my legs give up, then I will do that. I will do that.
Tell us how you go. You should see some pictures. A question, a lot of people like to ask questions about routine. So, you know, before you went to work, did you follow any, you know, as a CEO, did you follow any morning routines?
I am actually very superstitious. So I don't know if you know, Raghu, but I played football at a very high level when I was young. I actually even had an offer for a Spanish football club when I was 15.
Oh, really? Which one?
Espanol.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I was at some point thinking.
You're fairly good. Yeah.
At that time.
Yeah.
And you know, I always, you know, wore the left shoe before the right shoe, and you know, there were certain things I had to do, and no matter where we were, I had to take a ball and go and put, you know, kick it in the net before the match started, just to like feel the feeling of making a goal. If I didn't do, I would usually not play well. I mean, it's quite superstitious, but I think when it comes to work, not really. Actually, not really. I try when I'm traveling not to make my program too crazy. I rather take an extra day than trying to squeeze in 9 meetings in one day. There was a day in Davao, I remember, where we had 9 customer meetings in one day. And one thing is I lost my voice, but secondly, that was just, so there were 2 things that bothered me. One, it was physically very hard. But number 2 is, you know, I, as I said before, care a lot about the relationship with the people I'm with. So I don't care these 9 customers, some were big, some were small, but I wanted to create a good impression on all 9. That's impossible. That is just physically impossible. So I realized that I must make sure to have energy to give 100% of me with all the people I meet. Otherwise, what's the point of meeting them? Then I'd rather not meet them. Because if I can't give a good impression, if I can't add value, and if I can't make a difference for our, you could say, relationship with MCC, then what's the point of even meeting them? So I have, in terms of routines, I have cut down to usually not starting early morning, for example, not starting until 9:30 or something, which was something I didn't do in the past. But I just realized, and actually usually trying to avoid dinners in the evening, not both an external lunch and an external dinner, because then I realized I can give much more, I get much more out of it. And it does sometimes cost an extra day traveling, which my wife doesn't really like, but that's just too bad. MCC likes it. Oh, it's good for MCC. And she says I'm married to the company sometimes.
Anyway. There's always a fine balance, yeah.
Yeah.
What is something that you believe in that other people think is crazy?
Well, as I said, I do meet a lot of people. And I think some people say, hey, as a CEO, should you really do that? But I think it's the right thing to do. And I have such a good team here in the headquarters in Singapore. So they can run a lot of the business now by themselves with some guidance, but they're good enough. So where can I add most value? I want to add value. So yes, I am actually out meeting people at all kind of levels, which, is maybe not so normal. And then in this interview I've spoke a lot, but actually I try to listen a lot to what people say. I'm this kind of person that I always tell people, well, I can change my mind easily if you can convince me. I'm just saying, so this is how I see it, but if you see it different and you are able to convince me, okay, then I'll see it differently. So I always challenge the people around me, it doesn't matter which level, to make me see the world differently. Change my perception of things. If they can convince me, then clearly they must be right. If I'm convinced otherwise, they must be right. If they can't convince me, then clearly they're not right.
At least you give them a chance, right? So I mean, it's a fair deal.
Of course, when I say this to them, I also joke a little. I say, if you can't convince me, then you've got to find better argument. If you still believe that you are right, then don't give up. Don't give up, but go back, find data, find arguments, find something better, and then you come back and convince me again.
Yeah.
I'll give you that chance, no problem.
Yeah.
And what else do I do, which is crazy? I'm not good at accepting people making the same mistake twice. Sometimes I am told that I'm very large and very kind CEO when people make mistakes. But that's because I believe that, if we were robots, we wouldn't make mistakes. But we are humans, and humans make mistakes. That's the fun part about humans. But just don't make the same mistake twice.
Mm.
Because then you have shown me that you don't care and you don't want to learn and it doesn't matter to you. And that is just not on for me.
Mm.
So I am very, very kind, if you can put it like that, when people make a mistake, no matter how stupid it is. But if they do it again, and they could have prevented it because they didn't really care about last time they made the mistake, I really get upset. You can ask my kids about that one.
They might have some interesting stories.
they can confirm that.
We learn a lot. We learn a lot also when we are challenged, right? So if you were to choose one of from your past, one of the most challenging experiences that you have faced, and how did you fix it? How did you solve it?
So probably people will suggest this Intra-Asia project, but actually I didn't consider it a big challenge. I know this sounds weird, but I thought it was an opportunity, and I've always thought we couldn't go wrong. So if you ask me for the biggest challenge in my life, that's probably not the one. I have maybe two. One is when I worked in Argentina. At that time, Maersk acquired Sealand, and we all took also over a lot of people from Sealand, and I had a lot on my desk, and I had weeks where I worked 12 to 14 hours per day, every day. So at that time, my son was just a baby, and I only saw him the weekend, because I would leave before he woke up. I would come home when he was sleeping. And I remember talking to my mom one day on the phone, and I was in my office in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, and I said to my mom, "Mom, I cannot see anything right now. I don't know what's happening, but I can't see anything. Everything got dark. I couldn't see anything, really. Never tried anything like it." And then my mom got so upset at me and said, "Okay, you are clearly overworked and overstressed. You got to find another way." And this was just, you know, but I was the second in command, and I was like in charge of everything, and I took everything on my shoulders. And I just learned that you can't do that. You can't do it on your own. You have to use your team. And the other challenge I had was taking an MBA. I mean, I took an MBA in 2007-08 on London Business School, Columbia, New York, at the same time as my full-time job in Maersk. And I have to thank my wife for that one, because I had also two small, fairly small children. So that was so tough. Mm. I mean, that was so tough. And it took 20 months. And you have these, I don't know, 30 exams, right, that you must pass. And I was away either in London or New York 1 week every month for 20 months. So I was 10 times in Manhattan and 10 times in London. A little easier from Denmark. I'm glad I was there and not in Singapore. But it was so tough. And I didn't miss a single class during those 20 months, because I said, you know, if the company is willing to pay, I think the total cost ended up being $200,000 or something. If the company is willing to pay this for me, then I also better
put in
an effort. So I didn't miss any classes. At least I was there physically in all the classes, but that was just so tough. And if anyone of the listeners are thinking of doing an MBA, I just have one advice. If you have children, just make sure that you or your spouse is
on board with
it. Is on board on this one.
Yeah.
Because it takes a toll on your spouse as well.
Yeah. And I'll go to the last question, because I think it's the most interesting one. If you know, we have very young listeners, we have people that just start in the shipping, in the supply chain careers. If somebody would ask you, if they wanted to be the CEO of a large company, what advice would you give them? What would you say?
It's a tough question. One thing that I have learned is that sometimes you actually need to think very carefully who your boss is. So I had 24 bosses actually in these 14 roles I have had, and I think that has helped me a lot in learning both how to do things and how not to do things. And I think you need to be humble in every role you have in just considering all these different people or seniors that you work with as opportunities to learn. In my daughter's school, they have this interesting word which they call fail. When you fail something, F-A-I-L, and they call it, you probably heard it out of it, they call it first attempt in learning. And I think it's such a strong phrase, because, you know, don't be put down by failures or mistakes or things not going exactly the way you wanted them to go. Just always try to focus, okay, so what can I learn from that? Why did this person think like that? Why do I think I do a great job when my boss does not? And what do you do when a boss, for example, does something you totally disagree with? Because that's a tough one also, right? I mean, do you object? You know, how do you object, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't want to get in trouble also. So sometimes some younger trainees come to me and ask me for, you know, so how should they pick their next role? You know, it's time for an expatriation, you know, which one should they pick? I actually tell them, you know, look maybe less in your early career on the salary package and so on. I mean, anyway, hey, whether you make 2,000 or 2,200 or 3,000, 3,500, longer term, that's not what's going to shape your career. So think about who you work with, what you can learn, and whether you will enjoy the job, and whether you can add value. I once got an offer to work for Maersk in Vietnam, and I really wanted to go to Asia. I was sitting in Denmark. I wanted to go to Asia, and I got a job offer to be CEO for, office manager for our office in Hanoi. And I thought, I can get back to Asia, right? But then I started analyzing it. I'm thinking, okay, first of all, I have to work Saturdays as well. So that means 6 work days. At that time, we worked Saturdays in many Asian countries. Number two, I will work a lot, but I'll not get any exposure because Hanoi is reporting to Ho Chi Minh, that's reporting into the Singapore office. That means the exposure to the Singapore Asia headquarter I wouldn't get because I would kind of only report down to Ho Chi Minh. And I'll be on my own. You know, my boss would be sitting in another location, which is difficult if you want to really learn early in your career. So I actually rejected it, even though it was a fantastic opportunity to be office manager for 14 people, and I think many would have accepted it, but I actually rejected it. And then I got Argentina instead, which was where I got all the things that I wouldn't have gotten in Hanoi. So maybe an advice is not to jump on the first best, you know, the first opportunity that's presented for you. You think carefully what you will get out of it, and can you add value, and do you then get exposure? I mean, do you get something
to do more,
efforts?
Learn more? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And will people
experience
notice?
More. Mm.
Because, I mean, let's not beat around the bush. You need to. I mean, there are many people fighting for good positions. You need some kind of
visibility.
So it doesn't matter if you do a hell of a great job in Hanoi, if nobody's going to notice. Then it's better to have a lower role, which I then had in Argentina as the second, but everyone noticed. So
no,
anyway, just I mean, I could, if I had longer time, I could give a lot of more advice, but I think I said enough.
Tim, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for the time, for sharing with us today. Wish you a very good break, a very good journey, and a very good trip to South America. And I'm sure we'll catch you soon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radopalamariu.com/podcast for all the show notes, links and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.